Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
And we got a good one today, man. Frank Miller and Jeff Darrow, hard-boiled. But before that, what's on your plate?
Patreon.com/Ed Piskor for the Red Room comic strip. I'm putting new strips up every Tuesday. $3 gets you the archive. And as of this recording, there were more than 50 pages up there right now, almost wrapping up issue one. So get it while it's hot.
50 pages for the first issue. Damn.
It'll be 62 pages when it's all said and done.
My latest comic, Octobriana 1976, world's first blacklight comic, printed with awesome fluorescent ink, ready to sear your retinas, is available now in comic shops everywhere. It is selling great, so thank you all for that. But pick it up when you see it, because I don't know how long it'll be around. And if you're curious how I made it, there's a process zine available on my website, jimrugg.com, 350 pages. Goes through every draft I made, talks about the whole process of going through the Kickstarter experience. So if you're a maker, you want to add that to your shelf of how-to books.
Hard-boiled Frank Miller. This is a book, like, I came to this a little bit late. I didn't get it when it first came out.
Well, Ed, I did, because I was the biggest Frank Miller mark at the time, and he wasn't making comics whenever I became a Frank Miller fan. You know, it's when he was in Hollywood writing stuff. And so this, when he comes back to comics, he did a series of projects, and it was covered, you know, like I would buy anything with Frank Miller's name on it, comic scene with a Jim Lee X-Men cover, but the hard-boiled Frank Miller is what I was going for. Dark Horse, it was a coup that they got Frank Miller to come to Dark Horse, a small black and white indie company. These are some of their promotional efforts that are coming out, promoting what's coming out in the upcoming year, promoting what's coming out in the upcoming month. There was just a lot of endorsement for this. You know, Miller was one of the most revered creators at the time. The first story in this issue with the Jim Lee X-Men cover is a Frank Miller story to kind of like let you know where Frank Miller was. So my first exposure to Hard Boiled is this image right here. This was the baddest ass thing I had ever seen in my life. At that point, I wanted violence. I wanted tough guys. I wanted detail and lines on paper. This was all of those things more than any other image I had ever seen in my life. I could not have anticipated a comic book more than I did Hard Boiled. This was it for me.
Yeah, it's incredible. And just looking at the dates on these things, man, 1990, I was 8, so I excuse myself. I didn't even know comic shops existed.
very understandable. But, you know, like, the thing that was coming through in all of these interviews, all this promotion is, Comic Scene called it the most violent comic book currently available. Chuck Rosansky from Mile High Comics said it left the reader feeling nauseous due to the over-the-top violence. I don't know how old, I'd have been 13 or 14 when I got hold of this. This is what I wanted, man. Totally. This was everything I wanted. And so I mentioned that Miller's away from comics making for a bit. You know, yeah. It's about 4 years I think he spent in L.A. basically writing stuff. One of the things that he wrote in that time, of course, is RoboCop 2. That's about the same time, apparently, that he was writing this book. And so very quickly, he's a cyborg. This is a cyborg that is kind of a tax collector, I think is his cover, but really he's like a corporate, I don't know, assassin. Is that how you would describe him? That believes himself to be a variety of identities, including this tax collecting character named Nixon. The story is not an easy, coherent thing to follow, but we are not really here for the story.
No, and that's sort of the beauty of this comic. Because you don't get hold of a Jeff Darrow and make him draw some domestic sequences
no,
leading up to the big shit. Just jump right into it. It's the beauty of Mobius, actually. You know, like don't bog us down with nonsense. We talked some Jorge Savino back in the day on this channel and pulled out like a Chuck Dixon Punisher book, and it's like, Chuck, why are you forcing this guy to draw these bullshit preludes? Violence. Have him run around in the jungle, kick some ass. That's what this comic is. It's not about winning an Eisner for best writer.
No, and this sums it up perfectly. This is a car crash of a comic, at least in a narrative sense.
Yeah.
But all the better. So, you know, some of the stuff that I would describe this is things like Cyborg, Blade Runners, 1950s, the future, not human.
I mean, it's very much Philip K. Dick, you know, do androids dream of electric sheep?
Dystopian.
Yeah.
So the very beginning here, you're seeing this is my first exposure, of course, to Jeff Darrow.
Yeah.
You see it from the very get-go, right? Guns on top of guns, detail, grenades on top of the gun holsters, on top of the gun holsters on these guys' costumes. And they're just security dudes at this corporation or whatever, where the scientist comes running in, robot dog. I feel like this kind of stuff. Miller's famous for working with these artists like Bill Sienkiewicz on Elektra Assassin, for example, and then adapting his script, revising his script to reflect the art that comes back.
Exactly.
And I think that's, you know, a lot of what this story comes out of is that, like, Jeff Darrow puts that robot dog in. You know, Jeff Darrow puts 37 guns on the guard. And yeah. I think that Miller responds to that.
He's a very precise artist and a great designer of stuff. So, like, just go through pages and...
This is it, man.
We're going to see, like, cool guns, interesting cars.
I tried copying this thing, man. Whenever I was a kid, I wish I had that around to look at, because I'm sure it's a disaster, but...
You know...
Wow.
He inspired, you know, a generation of Avatar Comics artists, right? And, like, when I was going through this, I was like, who would, in their right mind, try to draw like this? And then, try to co-opt and copy off of Jeff Darrow. And honestly, like, in those guys who came later, who you find in Avatar Comics, it adds to the genius of Jeff Darrow. It makes you understand Jeff Darrow even more, because those guys, they could do the lines and they could do the little micron pens and with the thinner lines on the inside, but they can't do this. They can't compose this stuff, and they don't have the imagination.
It's such a good page turn. It's straight on, and then it's the 90 from the 90 degree position pulled back so you can see it all. Just excess. This is Extreme Studios kind of stuff. And you know who might do this, Ed? I see these bullets flying. I have a poster of Stephen Platt Prophet on my wall at home.
Yeah.
Those bullets look almost the exact same of all the casings just flying by. But the Jeff Darrow, what he brings to it, besides... It's so excess. You know, the excess is the comedy, but these car designs are awesome.
That's what I'm
saying. You know, and they're throwaway. Like, it's not even what we're talking about, and yet they're there and they're awesome.
Yeah, and wait till you see a highway full of them.
It's just, it just never stops. I picked this thing up and just, my brain was like, what in the hell is this? I have never seen anything like it. Rereading it this week, I still haven't seen anything like this.
No. You can't step to this guy, you know? And,
It's like a punk club. They're in a cage or whatever, just a giant orgy in this club.
Yeah, this is the fuck section of our club. It's like Perverted Where's Waldo.
Oh man, crashing through the brick wall. I love this stuff so much. And then all of this reminds me of like the early Japanese death matches. I would see like a photograph of Terry Funk with barbed wire on the cover bleeding everywhere. It feels like it, like especially this stuff, you know, where he's just wrapped up in barbed wire, glass stuck in his fingers.
And gnarly fingers and stuff. This guy can produce. These are excessive pages, but he could churn them shits out, man. You know, he's done a lot of work.
What is this even? Like these little floating mermaid women cleaning this giant fat boss whose name's Williford, by the way. This is like the Williford Corporation. This is Mr. Williford. Obviously a reference to Charles Williford, the great crime fiction writer.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. I was also looking at great lettering is a note I have.
Yeah.
And this is one of the panels that really sums that up. And like this lettering that's so great, it's neon lettering for like the cafe good food signs. That's all Darrow drawing. It's not like that's a letterer putting that in. Then the E's behind the ambulance, pretty weird. I didn't even notice that for the first 20 years of looking at this comic, but it fits, it works. But all the excess of like the figures on the sidewalk, and this is going to happen again and again where you start looking close and it's almost like there's just drawing everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Even between characters, they'll be drawn. You know, you can see it here. The road's completely full. There's no gap between cars. Everything is just full.
Yeah. And when you see those crowds full of people, like, there's the punk character, and they all have interesting costumes.
And this is what it looks like after you go through this. This is the results in surgery of trying to stitch this guy back together.
Look at that Matrix shit right there. The Wachowskis were like...
There's a lot of Matrix. I see a lot of Matrix in this. And of course, Darrow doing storyboards and design work with them. I'm sure they saw this comic and were like, what's his number?
Yeah, for sure,
let's get him on the horn.
The Sentinel robot right there.
Does all this line work? There's a black and white edition of this book out there. It's called Big Damn Hard Boiled. You guys listening at home, feel free to send a copy or two of that. But I'm always curious because, like, the blood is black. This is the Tim Vigil kind of, you know, black and white outlaw comic blood. And very little of this comic is black or, yeah, you know, black isn't really used for shadows. You don't see, like, shadows under Nixon or these wires. But the blood splatters are black. Mm-hmm. I think this would be gorgeous probably in black and white. And I've seen Darrow work in black and white. And it is gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's perfect. It's flawless. It's funny. That's the Graphomania, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And he can still do expression. It's not like it's just this excess on the left here that we see. He's still able to communicate things like body language and facial expressions.
You don't do this kind of thing unless you can't not do it. You know, it's a compulsion.
You talk about the domestic scenes. So these two little kids, this is Nixon at home with his wife and his family, mixing in a sex scene to try to combat, like, his memories of however he was most recently destroyed. Apparently this happens a lot. He's often out of control, or I guess maybe the task that he's assigned, it's inevitable that it ends in bloodshed. But trying to kind of bring him back to this domestic, bring him back online, I think is the way they describe it. And the kids, of course, are in on it. This reminded me a little bit of The Truman Show. Especially this image where it's like, okay, I'm back to normal, I'm going back to work, and it's this very colorful, bright scene. Whenever I mention the 1950s early on, that's what, you know, this is the part that I'm referring to.
Yeah,
by
Mad
that
Men.
1950s, yeah. The suburban paradise.
Right.
This is a reference to Give Me Liberty, right?
Yes.
Concurrent project, or near concurrent. This book also takes, I think, about a year and a half for all three issues to come out. Not a good thing at the time.
Right.
In terms of, you know, I love this comic, but a year goes by, I've had like six other favorites in that amount of time.
Takes a while to craft these babies.
Incredible, though, man. I was so... I read this thing, I reread it, I looked at the pages, I tried to copy the art. It felt like something like an alien artifact. It made no sense to me compared to whatever other comics I had read. I hadn't read anything European, you know, Mobius was sort of, I was aware of, but I didn't know heavy metal very well.
Yeah.
This was just like, I have no idea what this is.
Yeah, I think my first Jeff Darrow piece was really just pinup in Spawn. And I was just like, what the heck is this? I can't even tell what's going on. It was cool. It was interesting. But it wasn't until Wizard Magazine that I even knew that this existed.
This is great. All the, like, he draws a variety of stuff in this series, too, even though it seems like it's, I'm just saying, ultraviolence. But he draws all these different pieces from domestic stuff to, like, interiors of cars and car, you know, chase scenes. Incredible. Like, this is stuff that's almost, it's very hard to draw. There are great cartoonists that can't draw cars at all. He makes it all look great.
Yeah, just wait till we see, like, you know, believable-looking on-ramps and stuff. This shit right here.
Drawing old women or kids, also very hard. Yeah, this stuff is ridiculous. This is the police car of the future. Just a giant monster truck tank war machine that's, like, three lanes wide driving over cars.
It's so sick. He hits a button and drops these little caltrops out. So dope.
Causing a massive, massive accident. Yeah, I love all of this stuff. Should point out the colorist is Claude Legris. I guess a French colorist, certainly sounds French. I've heard that Jeff Darrow didn't like this coloring, and there is a new edition out that's colored by somebody else, Dave Stewart maybe, somebody like that, that's, I guess, brown. Is you know, call it what it is.
What, this is brown?
No, the newly colored one. Everybody likes brown, right? I mean, Brian Boland recolors Killing Joke, and then it's brown.
Right.
I don't understand it. Not the best page for me to be calling other comics brown.
Right.
But there is a lot of color in this comic, and I assume that's what's taken out. This is a fish truck that's part of this, like, 20-car pileup. A shark and other, like, aquatic animals go flying out the back whenever it crashes. People going through windshields. This is almost like a Where's Waldo.
Yeah, there's pigs up there, I think. Yeah.
It rewards that kind of, like, look closely. It's a mushroom cloud in the middle of the city. How much drawing is here? And then this badass stuff. Nixon's not done. We knew he wasn't going to... This car accident was not going to finish him, even if the car is blown from a mushroom cloud across the city and bounces off a building. and then kicks the door open. And this is what I was talking about, like every square inch is drawn. So you see wherever it is, anytime you see sidewalk or whatever, it's going to be filled with garbage, bullets, drug paraphernalia, food.
And it all, like he draws the stuff. Mm-hmm. When you see, you know, your average kind of litter in comics, it's kind of like it's just lines, you know, it's very suggestive. You're getting every cigarette butt.
Yeah, we've admired Todd McFarlane debris, which looks good, but it's a lot of cross-hatching. Yeah. The vending machine with weapons, ninja stars, grenades, pistols. So stupid. Man, I loved this so much whenever I got hold of it. But see, this is the inventive stuff, right? It's purple instead of, again, you know, what color's a sidewalk? Well, let's make it that color. What's gray and brown? That's not any fun.
Right.
This is another spot of that where it's like start looking in the background and you will see complete graphic novels in these backgrounds.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, very lived in looking city, man, with cultures of people.
Yeah, and all invented, you know? It's like that cyberpunk future kind of, you know, he's not referencing photos for this stuff. Like people are in elaborate costumes, fights are happening. It's so over the top. And this is a big fight between Nixon and this old lady.
Yeah.
Is primarily what's going on in this issue. Jeez. They might be robots and cyborgs, but there is some kind of fluid inside of them that loves to leak out. Explosions of bodies and parts flying, sometimes body parts. He has this little girl. The premise is that this old lady had kidnapped this little girl. It's a whole elaborate ruse. They're trying to get Nixon to kind of go offline, pretty much, like robots, you know, living. So there's your Blade Runner reference that I had made earlier. It's almost like these robots, some of them gain a certain sentience, and that's kind of an ongoing battle. Like, can they escape the corporations that created them and you know, give them their programming? It's so much. Cops get involved.
Nice Fritz Lang looking building.
All of the lettering stuff, like the signage. I love all of it. Billboards.
Yeah, he did his time in Japan and has moved back there several times to work on various projects. So that aesthetic is always factored into his work.
This is Behemoth grocery store, and if you pay attention to what everybody's hauling, it's giant objects, giant carrots, giant cans of soda, giant peanut butter or Tang.
He foresaw Costco.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But very literal.
Yeah.
Very fun. And so this dude, the engineer for Nixon, he's just melting down, like, what are you gonna do? And this robot is part of the robots. Like, they want to break free, and so she doesn't allow him to go do his job. Very violent.
Yeah, love it.
Understated, but very violent. And now Nixon, man, after an issue of getting his ass kicked, well, he's not dead yet, but the human stuff is almost all gone.
Look at that, man. It's like real spark plugs. It's like referenced spark plugs.
Bent scissors.
Makes me wonder if Darrow has at least some element of like a photographic memory or something. Because it's like, if you're referencing all of this stuff, that just adds to the time it takes to draw these damn pages, you know?
Yeah, you're right about that. It would take forever if you were really going out and referencing spark plugs and not just kind of... That's interesting. Next time we hopefully see him at a show sometime... something to talk to him about, ask him about. So a little pinup. I think that's the cover of the new edition. And then there's like a year and a couple months delay between issue 2 and issue 3. This is issue 3. We should be showing off the front and back covers because that's pretty great.
Yeah.
The one thing that's weird, though, this is, you know, the rest of the car that's being kicked in. It's a really cool image, but it doesn't wrap around the spine, so you don't get it as one continuous image, unfortunately, because... All those images are really strong. Oh, and by the way, Rolling Stone is your quote. 1990, Rolling Stone meant a lot in 1990. Like, that quote is something. And so finally the conclusion comes out after all this time. And I think the coloring, it's still the same colorist, but it feels like it's gone up a notch. I have no idea why it took so much longer for this third issue. I mean, all of them look like they would take forever, but... you think, get it done or something.
I bet you, like, you get the two issues done, and then they're like, okay, we'll start to solicit them. It only will take me, you know, this much time to finish the third. Like, yeah. It never takes that amount of time.
By the way, she's stuffing this guy down the toilet is what's happening in this sequence. And back to Nixon. This reminded me of They Live a little bit.
Sure.
I'll take that anytime. I love these colors, like purples, you know, in your junkyard fight. This is a very long sequence of full page back and forths between these two characters. And this is what the old lady is like when she peels off her her fat suit.
Yeah. She's arousing the robot guy.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to admit that he's a robot.
Right.
He's not going to have it.
I'm a normal guy. I'm not like you. The punches are great where, like, just pieces are flying off. Punches her head off. I can see why, you know, Frank Miller said he rewrote this to be as funny as it could be. You can see why. It's just absurd.
Yeah. Yeah, like, look at all these little nymphs on our Williford guy.
Yeah, you wonder again, like, what was this written as? How was this described in the first draft?
The body language and acting here is really great.
Even the character design's pretty good.
Oh, for sure.
That giant monobrow could be connected to Octobriana.
Looks like that one guy in Goodfellas who buys the expensive coats when they say don't buy anything expensive.
Nixon walking is pretty good body language too. You see, like, his legs are all
little
twisted.
Zombie walk.
Turned. Anytime anybody confronts him to it, they're just met with violence. Like someone pulls a gun on him. Look how little the panel sequence is too. It's kind of like, this is not even a thing at this point, even though this is what I came for. The dog's drooling as he sees Nixon rip somebody's hand off and shove a gun down their throats. Williford, the company that made him.
Yeah, he's starting to accept it. I'll be a monkey's uncle, he says.
The robot revolt. Nixon's coming home. That's what she's following, with the hope that somehow these robots are going to be liberated. They're going to find their freedom, and Nixon's going to be the guy who does it. Uncle. I said uncle. Nixon's backing down. He's had enough. There is just nothing left of him. Williford has his own tank, his own defense, his own entire fighting forces that have basically been decimated as Nixon has gone off the rails, but he still has his own body armor tank, super wheelchair, and ultimately he's just shot Nixon into submission. And there, he'll need to be reformatted. It's so weird. They're your giant spark plugs.
Yeah, man.
She realizes that little bit of a revolution is over and that it didn't work. She plugs into this power source, turns it up to full power, and commits suicide. Hopeless. The robots have lost. And Nixon, he's back to work after a bad day at the office.
Thick, bold lines. The boldest that Darrow's ever done. Like, that might be a smaller drawing, you think?
Yeah, I looked at this a long time back in the day and even the other night, and it's just like, I don't know. It's there's nothing wrong with this, but when you think of Hard Boiled or you think of Jeff Darrow, like, this is so not it.
Yeah, this, like, Shaky Kane.
Yeah, yeah, Shaky Kane's a good... But...
There it is. Hey, honey, I'm home.
Hard Boiled, man. And one note is... Our own Ben Mara, outlaw cartoonist Ben Mara, dropping a little bit of a letter in here.
What's he say?
So Ben Mara's letter. I have one question for Jeff. Did he ever draw for cartoons? And cartoons being the
magazine.
Yeah, the magazine.
Of course,
it's italicized there. That Alex Toth drew for.
Yeah.
I don't know why he has that question. Maybe there's a guy in there that he thinks, you know, some style resemblance.
Good cars.
Yeah, that's the other reason that he might have asked. Maybe he was a car fan at this point and was like, get some Jeff Darrow on there.
Ben, leave a comment.
Wow, Ed. I'm tired just going through that.
Yeah, yeah. Exhausting amount of work. Amazing. Like, once in a generation kind of artist, you know? Like, there aren't two Jeff Darrows, man.
There sure aren't. And, you know, there's timing, too. Like, this happens before... We would know him on Instagram if he exists, you know, if this were today. Like, this was just like Frank Miller's new book. Okay, let me pick it up. What?
Yeah, like this guy came out of nowhere. There was the Child's Play Daredevil Punisher cover that he did, and that had a lot of bullets, and that you noticed that. You saw that on the stands, you noticed that. But where the fuck did this guy come from, you know? Where the hell did this guy come from? I think he worked in animation or something. I know he's friends with Mobius. He was over there in France doing whatever. But, man.
Yeah, you know, before this, I think the only thing I know of is a short story that was in Dark Horse Presents years before this. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that I can think of that he would have done in American English. And it really was like this dude just showed up. You know, at least from my perspective as an American audience, it was like one day Jeff Darrow entered my life and it was with Hard Boiled. And the other part, I love thinking about that this comes out of like RoboCop 2, writing ideas, frustration. Who knows what, you know, Frank Miller was going through in terms of putting that together and thinking about robots. There's always been lots of great robot information out there, both science fiction and sort of in development. So it's hard to tell what he's drawing from, but it's kind of cool to think of this in conjunction with something like RoboCop 2 and some of the ideas that didn't fit there, but were still in his head. I dig it, man. It was cool to revisit, but the impact is Jeff Darrow.
Absolutely.
You know, this is his coming out party.
It's very exciting, and we're extremely lucky when somebody of this caliber of talent comes through comics.
It's rare, and it's super awesome that he continues to make comics, you know? I mean, like, if you could be one and done, and we'd still be talking about you 30 years later if this is what you did. It's great that there are several other Jeff Darrow books that we can look at. But amazing, man. Just amazing.
And I think we should look at more Jeff Darrow work in the future, perhaps. Another Frank Miller, Jeff Darrow piece.
Hey, man. Anytime.
K-Favors, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new videos are available. Octobrion is in stores right now. Selling out fast. Patreon.com/EdPiskor for fresh Red Room comic strips. Those links are in the description directly below.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
I got that big guy, Rusty the Boy Robot, right over there, man. Give him the Martian orders, dude.
Read more comics.